Welcome to the Bear With Me podcast, where we seek to integrate belief and practice in the Christian life. Hi, my name's Andy Withrow. I'm a pastor at the Table Church in Victoria, British Columbia, and I'm with Vanessa Caruso, who is a spiritual director, yeah. And she also directs the Abbey here at the Table Church, which basically seeks to do what this show seeks to do, which is true. Integrate belief and practice in the Christian life. So this, we could have just called this the Abbey podcast.
We could have.
When we spent all those hours trying to think of the best name. Right. By now, if people have been listening, they're probably figuring out there's not going to be any bears featured.
No. We talked about doing one episode a year on bears.
Well, that's true. You never know.
Yeah.
We could do something.
For all those bear enthusiasts.
We'll keep it on our radar. We'll keep it on our radar. Anyway.
Anyway. So.
What are we talking about today, Vanessa?
Let's talk about creativity.
Ooh.
One of the longings for the table, or core longings for the table. The one that the table's working through right now is this. We long to creatively engage with God, one another, creation, and culture, since we reflect the image of God who creates, renews, and restores. So we long to creatively engage. So Josh did a sermon on this about God, creator, dust, death, limitations, trust.
Right.
Do you remember all that?
I do.
Naomi and Jonathan talked about what creativity, their process of creativity in their own life.
You can find all of this on the Table Radio podcast.
You can.
Which is like our sister podcast. Yeah. I guess it could be our brother podcast. Mother podcast.
Yeah. So they all talked about that. And then you guys asked me to talk about what this looks like in my own life.
Right. So the sermon series right now kind of goes like, here's the big idea. And then we have a conversation about the next Sunday. And then the third Sunday, another person like tries to get super practical. And what does this look like in my own life? What does this aspect of our community's core longings look like?
Yeah. So I'm doing that this upcoming Sunday. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of working out. When you just said get super practical, I was like, oh man, I need to get more practical, as always.
More practical than you typically feel like you do.
Yeah.
Okay.
But here are some ideas so far about creative engagement. The story that comes to mind for me is the kingdom of heaven is like a jewel merchant on the hunt for exquisite pearls. Finding one that is flawless, she immediately sells everything and buys it. Don't you like that translation? Mm-hmm. That's Eugene Peterson.
Message.
The message. The kingdom of heaven is like a jewel merchant on the hunt for exquisite pearls. Finding one that is flawless, she immediately sells everything and buys it. I think creative engagement is like being on the hunt for jewels. I feel like that's a great metaphor for what my life when I'm living creatively and in an engaging way looks like. It's like being on the hunt for jewels. So I looked up engagement because that word, you know, it's kind of a big word. And did you know this? It comes from a word meaning to pledge. Gage means to pledge something.
Talking about engagement and jewels.
Yes.
Together makes me think of
proposals.
Yes.
I know. But it didn't originally have that. I mean, I guess it kind of does. The connotation was like you get significantly involved in something.
Yeah.
You pledge something. So it used to be you throw in your glove. You're
putting something valuable to represent your commitment.
Yes. Like this is a sign that you have me. So they throw in their glove and that means like you can count on me for battle.
Okay.
But now, you give your hand, your finger. And you say,
they used to give each other their little literal fingers.
Yeah.
And then they figured, let's have these rings be stand-in.
Right. I'm sure that's accurate. So engagement is a pretty big word. It's definitely not about surface involvement. It's significant involvement. And it became popular, like our English word comes from the French use of the word engage. And that became really popular after World War II.
This is getting so scholarly.
I know. Well, this is the most scholarly part, I assure you. After World War II, when artists and thinkers and writers started to really take a stand in social and political issues with their art. That's when the verb to engage became really popular. So that's engagement. It's like this, you're highly implicated in something. Mm-hmm. You're offering yourself in some significant way. Creativity, I didn't look up creativity, but I just thought, okay, what does creativity mean to me? And it's always about newness for me. Creatively is about making connections that weren't there before. It's about seeing something that you hadn't seen before, coming up with something new, or having a grace happen in your life that was just so surprising or different or better than you imagined. So there's like a real newness mm-hmm. to creativity. I thought of a couple very simple examples of creativity in my life. And one was when my landlord lost his phone through a crack in the deck. We have this like gazebo at our house.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just like 6 inches off the ground, but it's mm-hmm. right above the soil and the grass. And there's these tiny slabs, or these slabs of woods and these tiny cracks in between them. He had mm-hmm. a really thin phone, and it just fell through the crack, and it's like in the middle of this gazebo. So it's like 4 feet in from every mm-hmm. side, because it's a square little gazebo. So he told me that he lost it, and he's just like, before it rains, I can't get it back. It's over. And I was like, no, we have to get it. And we spent probably 20 minutes, you know, getting like different contraptions and working together with like thin spatulas to like grab the phone through the crack and lift it up.
Yeah.
And that day when I was like doing my examine at the end of the day, like what was a consolation? What was something that brought me to God? A desolation, something that brought me away from God.
Yeah.
I was like, hands down, one of the best days of my life was getting the phone. No, it wasn't even a phone. I think it was keys. I forget now if it was a phone or keys, but it was something, it doesn't actually matter. It was the problem solving nature
yeah.
of him just saying, Vanessa, there's no way. Like I've thought about this. Mm-hmm. There's no way we can get this. And then being like, no, there is a way. We just have to think outside the box. So that was like, I remember thinking like that was creativity. Yes. And it was so satisfying.
That, yeah, well, it makes me think of all the things that engage our attention that are like problem solving.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about like that. I would be the same way. Like, mm-hmm. I want to figure out how to solve this problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, there's something that kind of taps into our creativity.
Yeah.
Longing to solve a puzzle.
Yeah. And see what I mean by newness? Like creativity isn't just about fixing mm-hmm. things. There is something about newness. Like you're coming up with something that didn't exist. That's the create part of it.
Yeah.
I think fixing is part of creating probably. But yeah. But I really like the newness part.
Yeah.
Another example I thought of, this is very mundane as well, but I remember when I realized that if I defrosted the chicken tonight, it would make today better, tomorrow better. mm-hmm. Like that was a new pathway for me as a mom and as someone who doesn't like making dinner and who feels like things like meal prep are so monotonous.
Mm-hmm.
I just felt like a monk. Like I felt like there's this article by Thomas Merton called Firewatch, and it's him on Firewatch at the Abbey of Gethsemane, I think. And it's where monks take turns staying up overnight and mm-hmm. looking out and making sure everything's running smoothly and watching for any potential fires, I guess. Mm-hmm. And it's like it's doing your rounds kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I thought, oh, in my very domestic life right now, this was a couple years ago, at the end of the night when everyone else is asleep, I could do my little rounds in the house to try to make tomorrow better. Hmm. Like I could pick up the living room. I could think ahead of time and say, is there anything to pull out from the freezer now that could make tomorrow better? And so defrosting the chicken just became a metaphor for me of like that newness yeah. of creativity. Mm-hmm. Like, why didn't anyone ever tell me? Defrosting the chicken could have so much punch, pack a punch of meaning, you know? So that was another example I thought of, which I didn't like work myself up to that example. I mean, I guess it kind of happened, but I was looking, I was looking for help, and that became something that became very meaningful for me. I also think of Al-Anon meetings, which is like one of the, you know, 12-step meetings. They have a few lines in there, and I'm sure all recovery meetings have something along these lines. They say in their opening, "We discover that no situation is really hopeless and that it is possible for us to find contentment." They say later that no situation is too difficult to be bettered and no unhappiness too great to be lessened. Mm-hmm. Some people in there have children who are addicts, you know, and like very tough lives. Mm-hmm. And to see people actually believe that there is hope for their life to experience contentment, serenity, meaningful relationship with God and other people is radical. You know, that there are groups of people that say there is no situation. I don't even want to give examples of things I've heard that are so horrific, you know, hard for me to imagine kind of living with hope through them. And you actually witness people who tell each other, "I'm telling you, there is no situation too great to be lessened." That to me is like creativity at kind of in a bigger way.
Yeah.
So those are a few examples of creativity for me. So should I keep going?
Yeah.
So I talked about engagement and creativity. Mm-hmm. And the core longing is we long to creatively engage with God. So I came up with, I thought about what are the conditions for me for creative engagement? Like being on the hunt for jewels requires kind of different conditions for living.
Yeah.
Than your kind of flat world model where what you see is what you get. You know, I'm not coming up with these very well, but like you are what you produce. Mm-hmm. This real utilitarian kind of industrial model of living, creatively engaging with God kind of requires a different environment to operate in. So I thought, what are the five conditions for creative engagement for me?
This setup reminds me of even the creativity of Jesus to tell stories like the Pearl of Great Price.
Yes.
Like that he's creatively engaging a mind shift or a mindset or an imaginative shift that he wants people to see something that they're not seeing. To see outside of the box or the contours of what just seems obvious in the moment.
Yeah.
He kind of wants to take the lid off of that with the parables. And he has a lot of them, not just the pearl one, but he has a lot of them, I think, for that purpose, to try to get people to see by listening. Which is an interesting concept.
Yeah. Make that connection. Like it sometimes says he only spoke in parables to the crowds.
Yeah.
Like, that is super creative engagement.
Yeah.
To only speak in these very enigmatic, weird stories constantly. It's so weird and interesting. And he was operating in kind of under a different set of rules.
Yeah.
By doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a good distinction to me. There's the world where what you see is what you get. The creative engagement world to me is there's more going on than meets the eye.
Mm-hmm.
It's that posture.
Yeah. Which everything that I, reading the scriptures, everything points in that direction. Like they're constantly pointing us as there's more here than we can see.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you get when you engage the scriptures on that level, the Bible on that level, is opening ourselves up to a different worldview, a different way of seeing ourselves and one another and God and the creation.
Yeah. I agree. It's so fun too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The first different condition, I don't know what to call it. I listed it here as a different morality. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that would like weird people out, but What I mean is that this place of creative engagement with God and a creative way of engaging life does not operate under the rules of like right and wrong. There is a right and wrong. There's this quote, and I don't know who it's from. I feel like it's a translation from an Eastern person, mm-hmm. so I don't want to get that wrong, but here is the translation. Out beyond ideas of right doing and wrong doing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. And I heard that probably in college, and I was like, that sounds like God to me. Mm-hmm. That's my experience of God. Out beyond the ideas of right doing and wrong doing, there's a field, and I'll meet you in that field. Field is that kind of open, out of the box metaphor for me. It's like this open space where there's possibility and there's newness. It's not tight. It's not rigid. You can't make mistakes where you're cut off from forever. There's this spirit of experimentation and play in that field. And I feel like God, that's where God really kind of exists and comes alive for me. So I don't mean that there's no right or wrong, but creative engagement kind of requires letting go of some of my older and more rigid assumptions about doing things right or doing things wrong, because it says you have to experiment and play.
Creativity necessarily pushes up against boundaries, against assumptions. Even the gospel is gonna do that. I mean, that's what you see, the new wine mm-hmm. for new wineskins for new wine. And it gets at that idea and that metaphor. The idea, kind of getting into the measuring stick or the different morality is you're putting it, the idea that grace travels outside of karma. Mm. Those are two different ways of being in the world. Mm. I think those things connect.
I've never heard that phrase. Did you make that up?
No, that's what's that from? It's from one of U2's albums.
Oh,
grace
cool.
travels outside of karma.
Oh, cool. Yeah, it's a grace economy. Mm-hmm. That field speaks to a grace economy,
which upsets a lot of things mm-hmm. when you're working under a karma economy or a measuring stick economy.
Yeah, one of the main aspects of that's meaningful for me is that mistakes, quote unquote mistakes, mm-hmm. are great information. They're not the end of the story. They're not a period. You're not doomed mm-hmm. because of making a mistake or something like that. Yeah. Parker Palmer, maybe in Let Your Life Speak, said, in life, as in any experiment, negative results are at least as helpful as positive results, which has been like a mantra for me in my life, because I can be a perfectionist and I can be so afraid of making a fool of myself, of making a mistake, of saying something I regret. And that's not operating in a grace economy where there's forgiveness.
Yeah.
You know, and
this is really hard in church culture mm-hmm. because everybody, almost everybody feels guilty about not reading their Bibles enough, mm-hmm. not praying enough. And so it just becomes this big paralyzing thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, I don't care. Just read it now because it's good. It's helpful and it's great.
Yeah.
And get creative and figure out a prayer life, because it's not about reading your Bible and praying. It's about engaging the Creator mm-hmm. in the Savior and the Redeemer of all humanity. Like, that's the thing, in the relationships, the thing. And I think mm-hmm. maybe those are helpful distinctions as well, because the law is good in that it points to the lawgiver, and the law is good in that it points to what God cares about in those sorts of things. But in and of itself, it's not the lawgiver. It's not the Creator. It's not mm-hmm. the divine parent. It's not who Jesus is. That's the thing. So it kind of goes back to our conversation about what the disciplines are for, mm-hmm. because we can kind of lose the forest for the trees, I guess, get mm-hmm. caught in the weeds of, oh, I'm not doing this enough.
Yeah.
Well, what are you doing it for?
Yeah.
And what's the bigger picture? And I think trying to free ourselves up about the relationship. We're talking Monday night with my discipleship class because this came up about just sort of the guilt of not doing enough, and just the permission to have seasons of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, oh, I didn't do it as much this past season.
Yeah.
Oh, I look forward to doing it again in another season. Like just trying to shift the the angle a bit, I guess.
Yeah. Permission's a big word for me in that field that we're talking about where creative engagement is possible. Mm-hmm. Permission, curiosity, grace, those all, it's hard to talk about, but those do define like the contours of that place where creative engagement with God is possible.
Yeah. Grace, the concept of grace, and we're getting on a little tangent here, but we'll come back. Grace assumes that we're not what we could be or should be. So I think that's our fundamental confession.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good to confess. Confession's good for the soul. I'm not what I should be. I'm not what I ought to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but there's still a relationship after that.
Mm-hmm.
And God still comes to us, restores after that. That's where we live, is in the restoration.
Yeah.
If we're getting caught up on, oh, shoot, I didn't do this enough. Like, you're nitpicking, like, your failure is way bigger than you didn't pray last week.
Yeah.
So, and God's already covered that. He's already said, okay, well, let's move on and let's keep going.
Mm-hmm.
So I that's where it's counterintuitive to be more aware of the depth of our brokenness is actually better and more freeing. Cause it's like, oh, well, why am I worried about, of course I'm going to struggle with this and that and the other, but the invitation is now to keep going with this creative relationship.
You just made me think like a practical kind of example of what this first one, this first condition, you know, a different morality, grace, a different economy, a grace economy, what that might look like is just that I feel like any creative person has had this experience where you like want to do a great painting or write a great poem or something like write a screenplay or something like that. And you don't do it because you're afraid it's not going to live up to the greatness of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the nature of this field is kind of saying, come on and try, like, let's see what happens when you actually do it. And you're a human and you're a creature and it's not going to be perfect, but you actually do engage instead of kind of withholding, because kind of like the elder brother, just kind of like, he's not partying yet. He's not someone who dances and feasts, even if it's for a reason that's unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of blocked up. He has like writer's block. He has like living block a little bit.
Life block.
Yeah. Because he's kind of stuck in the right and wrongness.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Okay. Can I move on?
Please.
Okay. Second condition is a different time zone. Living in a different time zone. We've talked
Calgary,
about time.
Calgary
time
zone.
Yeah, moved to Calgary.
Edmonton.
Sounds great.
We get a lot of listeners in Calgary.
Oh, yeah.
So I want to try to work them into every show.
Please do. Shout out to Calgary. We've talked about time on this podcast before because it's just one of our favorite topics. But in order to creatively engage, I just cannot be locked into a TikTok view of time. Which by TikTok, I mean kind of that utilitarian scarcity view of time. Like time is running out. Can't waste time. Got to produce well with time. You know, that like the crocodile in Peter Pan with the clock around its neck. Fate is going to get you. Try to make as much money as you can. And don't do anything that's not going to produce good feelings or money or a product or something like that. That is such a hindrance to creativity, is just kind of assuming that that's how time works.
Yeah. It's just anxiety.
Yeah. Sucks.
Mm-hmm.
But I say that and yet I'm pretty dominated by it. Like I've drank that Kool-Aid and I really have to.
Well, it's just so embedded in our time and place.
Yeah.
More so. It seems to me just from the little I know of history, that our time more than other times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, has this anxiety and this utility around it.
Yeah, well, just live in a world where we have to maximize profit, and we live in a city where you both companions better work full time if you want to live here. Mm-hmm. And that's different than a lot of other places and a lot of other times.
Yeah.
It's a different way of life and a different values and different assumptions.
Yeah.
So it's just all jumbled up and it's just the assumption. It's just you live here, this is what you do.
Yeah.
So it's hard to escape it. You have to be really creative.
Really.
Really hard.
Really intentional and creative.
I feel like you and Steven do that.
Oh, yeah. Do you do?
I think so.
I think so. Like. Yeah, I think so, too. I think it is a value for us.
With costs, I would assume. Mm-hmm. You're saying, okay, we're going to value these things less.
Yeah.
That other people are tending to value here, and we're going to value these things more.
Mm-hmm. It's a risk. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we're like, ooh, I made the wrong investment.
Yeah. Yeah, I could, yeah.
Yeah, one of our main investments is time. We both value having time to do what we want to do and time to spend with God, our son.
Yeah.
Okay, so this very creative guy, Makoto Fujimura, have you heard of him?
I've been trying to write down your references, and this is a really hard one. Yeah,
I'll give it to you.
What?
Makoto Fujimura. He's an artist.
Okay. I'm just going to write down an approximation and you'll remember later.
Great. He's amazing. He has a book out. I wonder what it's called. We'll find it.
We'll find it.
But he talks a bit about time. He says, mercy and beauty do not make sense in this view of time. Altruism
in the TikTok time.
Altruism doesn't make any sense. And it seems like wasting time to create beauty or to pay attention to the least of these in an act of mercy. Like both of those just do not make sense under this view of time. And he talks about creativity in this book. So whenever we think that creativity is, you know, just a means to an end or something like that, it's just, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
It's not going to make any sense. So I think one of the conditions for creative engagement is that you have to have kind of a nuanced sense of time, an alternative sense of time, a looser sense of time. Annie Dillard, you know, she's the one that says how you spend your days is of course how you spend your life. But before that, she says the life of the spirit requires less and less. Time is ample and its passage is sweet. Who says that? Time is ample. There's plenty of time and its passage is sweet. It's not the TikTok crocodile coming to get you. You wasted your life. You wasted your time. You wasted your day.
Yeah.
You wasted your year. Time is ample and its passage is sweet. That's how I want to live.
Sounds like Sabbath.
Yes. And she says it's the life in the spirit.
Yeah.
So that to me is key for creative engagement, is somehow leaning into a Sabbath time zone.
It made me think of Marva Dawn for that name.
The worship lady.
Yeah. A Royal Waste of Time. That's the name of her book on worship.
That's so cool. Is it really called that? I love it.
The Splendor of Worshiping God and Being Church for the World. I haven't read it, so I can't tell you about it.
Well, that you reminded me, Henry Nouwen says that praying is wasting time with God, not because it actually is, but it's because we have to tell ourselves that almost in order to
it's
shift.
Like, spending time with your family or your friends isn't, you don't have an agenda. You don't bring your, okay, here's my agenda. We have to get through these points. I mean, sometimes you have that, you know, your family staff meeting or whatever, but to enjoy life together, to go out to the park or for a walk or to the gardens or whatever you're doing, or go on a hike or just playing in the backyard, or doing a puzzle together. Mm-hmm. Like all those things are wasting time by certain definitions, but they're also the things that are, that's the relationship. That's how you're spending your days.
Yeah.
And it's the same. And I think Marva Dawn just making that connection with what worship is. Because it's not practical. It's not utilitarian.
No.
Why are we doing this?
It doesn't come out with a product that you can sell mm-hmm. or eat.
Spending time with God and one another.
Emily Griffin says that taking retreats, which is counterintuitive to this, the TikTok view of time, is a generous investment in your friendship with God. And that reframes retreating. Mm. You know, if you're like, I can't take a week off of work, I can't take a week off of parenting, or a week off of social media or whatever it is, to think, no, this is a generous investment in a friendship. Mm-hmm. That's different. So that's a whole conversation on its own, you know, time. But it is one of the qualities. It's one of the conditions for creatively engaging, is trusting that in spirit time is different. It's a different time zone. Mm-hmm. God can redeem our time in an instant, in a day. Better is one day in your courts than 1,000 plugging away in the TikTok world. Okay, you ready for the next one?
Ready. So we got different morality,
different time zone,
and now?
Different knowledge. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking wisdom. Wisdom is knowledge plus something. Knowledge is knowledge, like you learn something. Wisdom is like magical knowledge. Mm-hmm. It's knowledge that's gained through experience, discernment, and reflection. So it's knowledge that's integrated, reflected on. And it's different. It's different than just getting a bunch of degrees or memorizing a bunch of facts.
Applied knowledge.
Applied.
It's like knowledge. You can have a knowledge of all the keys on the piano, but to play the right notes at the right time in the right sequence with the right amount of pressure, it's different.
Love that. Which reminds me of the clanging gong. Mm-hmm. Like you can have all these things, but if you have not love, which is like wisdom about what's important in life, then it doesn't matter. And the Bible is full of wisdom. I mean, we just talked about that with the parables. Like Jesus only spoke in parables for much of his adult life in public. We have Proverbs, which is such a weird book, you know, Ecclesiastes, that first part, or maybe it's not the first part, maybe chapter 3 or something, but you know, there's a time for everything, a time to plant, a time to pluck, a time to weep, a time to laugh. There's a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to tear, a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak. And there's more than that.
Time to play all the different notes.
Right.
In the right season.
Right. Timing is one of the aspects of wisdom too, which we just talked about time, but creative engagement is kind of aiming for wisdom to meet over knowledge. Mm-hmm. And yeah, wisdom is just more mysterious. So coming to know what the time is for you, which of these times are you falling in or am I falling in? That's part of the creative life with God is coming to know what is the right thing or the good thing? Yeah. What is the invitation for me now in this situation? Mm-hmm. Doesn't apply to everyone all the time or even me all the time.
Yeah.
But it takes a lot of relationship and trust and experimentation to live in a way where you are discerning what is it time for? Is it time for me to stay in my role at the table? Or is it time for me to do something else? Is it time for me during Lent to engage more with people and relationships? Or is it a time for me to practice some solitude? Mm-hmm. Is it time for me to go against the grain of my personality and grow? Or is it a time to kind of be restored and go with what's natural in me? I mean, these are different for everybody at all times. And figuring that out is part of creative engagement with God. Yeah. What are you thinking about?
I think you would, like, trying to think of it practically, mm-hmm. like how to do that is, I think you would say paying attention, mm-hmm. learning how to pay attention
yeah.
to myself, to my God, to yeah. the people around me, what's happening around me, all those things.
Yeah.
Like, Gordon Smith wrote a book called The Voice of Jesus.
Yeah. Good book.
Which is on discernment, basically, which mm-hmm. just made me think of that. Is just paying attention, like asking seeking to answer the question, what do I think Jesus is saying to me mm-hmm. in light of the things that are happening around me in
exactly.
my life? And just being intentional about that can be so eye-opening and mm-hmm. valuable. But I think what we were talking about in the intro is like just the imaginative shift.
Yeah.
One, God is. Two, that God cares. Three, that God is present to me and actually speaking to me.
Yeah.
Those are all big assumptions that I think a lot of us struggle to believe. And so we don't do the next connecting bit of, okay, if all those things are true, maybe I should pay attention and assume that God is speaking to me through life, through
yes.
what's happening around me.
Yeah.
And Gordon Smith would tie that to being rooted in the scriptures. And mm-hmm. you have to know that the voice of Jesus has to be familiar to you for you to recognize it in the life around you. So mm-hmm. root in the stories of the older brother and mm-hmm. the pearl of great price and the new wineskins and the planting the seed in the four soils and mm-hmm. all the stories mm-hmm. and more.
Love it. You said that all so well. I think that's the key to wisdom, to developing wisdom. The program I did my spiritual direction training with, CenterQuest, they're like three-legged stool for the way of discernment is stop, look, and listen. I feel like I've talked about this, but mm-hmm. stopping is silence. So silence is one aspect in discernment. Mm-hmm. Looking is examine of some sort, mm-hmm. which is what you just said, what's happening in my life and how is God asking me yeah. to engage or respond in light of that? Listening is scripture, listening to the voice of Jesus and God's character over time through these stories mm-hmm. and becoming familiar with it and seeing how God is speaking to me through it. And one aspect of discernment, I think we've talked about here before too, with consolation and desolation, there are these terms, affect consolation and volitional consolation or desolation. Affect is like something that looks positive, like your affect, she looks happy. Mm-hmm. She looks hopeful. This consolation looks good. The go-to example for me is if someone gives me a compliment, you'd think in your journal at the end of the day, you'd be like, okay, what were the consolations? You're thinking, what are the good things? I'm like, oh, remember when I got that compliment? They're like, wow, that podcast episode was so great.
Was
you didn't say at all.
I ever heard.
Yeah, you're so eloquent, so profound. And so I write it down in my little consolation column. Mm-hmm. But really, the question is not about the affect. It's about the volitional consolation. Did that thing that seemed good bring me to God or bring me away from God? And the thing is with compliments, they don't bring me to God usually. They make me more self-conscious because I do have perfectionism.
Do insults bring you to God?
Yes.
I will remember that.
Remember the ministry of insults? I talked about it. Okay, good. Yeah, insults. I mean, I barely ever get insults, but conflicts. Bring me to God like nothing
brag.
Else.
I barely ever get insults.
I know. Weird. Oh, yeah. Maybe people will give me some now.
Yeah, I just want to bring you closer to God, Vanessa.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so insults bring you... Sorry, now that I brought this up.
Insults,
why do insults bring you
are volitional consolations because they bring me somewhere. They bring me to God.
Can I ask how...
Yeah,
I know you've covered this in the Ministry of Insults, but not on this podcast.
Right. True. Yeah. So
is it too long?
No, I'm just trying to think how to answer it quickly. Basically, they give me an opportunity to be to have a little bit of space between what I think I am and who I think I am. And, you know, this conflict or this insult just makes me, it gives me pause. And that moment is such a good moment for me because it's an opportunity to not reinforce that I am good because I am nice, likable, uninsultable, does everything well. Mm-hmm. You know, so it actually helps my true self kind of grow. It gives me some space, whereas compliments do the opposite. They reinforce. I mean, of course.
A certain self-view.
Yeah.
Or a self-sufficiency. Even.
It usually makes me feel pressure to maintain. Whereas an insult just kind of is like hurt so bad. And then I'm like, oh, I survived. And I'm actually, that is true. Like I'm not, I can't do everything. I do make mistakes. I did do that thing. So who am I? And it takes me to God because then I have to wonder, wait, where do I get my identity from?
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
I can't remember, the Ministry of Insults, was that a thing you spoke about or that you had written up?
I think I did it for Elaine's Everyday Me, Everyday God.
Yeah, that's right.
I can't think of where else.
Better write that down.
Yeah. Okay, should I move on? Because we have two more. Great. Different expectations is part of one of the conditions for creative engagement. For me, the main different expectation I have to bring into creative engagement is that I'm going to get hurt and it's going to be vulnerable to engage. Like going back to that definition of engagement, it's offering yourself in a significant way, which means I'm going to turn up the volume on wanting, on longing, on trying, on loving. And all of that means the stakes are higher.
Yeah.
I have higher to fall from. I have more love to risk, more love to lose. You know, like it's living in a very vulnerable way.
Yeah.
And that that's a really hard one for me. But that's why it's one of the conditions. If I'm going to creatively engage instead of just kind of live in a inside the box, what you see is what you get, just wait for life to be over.
Yeah.
I have to expect that it's going to hurt and I'm going to get some scrapes along the way. And changing the expectations does help. I remember talking about this at our neighborhood table. We were talking about anxiety. And I said, one of my problems with worrying as a parent is that it gets reinforced so much. So I'll be like, Leo, don't jump off that. You could break something. And so he doesn't, and he doesn't break something. And then that one time he did jump off.
But he's not good at jumping off of things.
True.
Because there's no
practice. He doesn't get to, and then he, yeah, exactly. That's what Sarah said.
It's like my mom never lets me jump off of things. That's why I broke my leg the one time I tried.
Which he did break his arm that one time. You weren't there because I was watching your kids. You and Katie went away.
Oh, yeah, that's
right. And he jumped off the trampoline during neighborhood table.
That's right.
Broke his arm.
That was a few years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I gave that as an example. And Sarah was like, I totally disagree with you. I don't think that was a bad thing that happened. Because I was like, bad things, it gets reinforced. That's why I keep worrying. Because then a bad thing happens. She said, no, wrong worldview. That wasn't a bad thing. That was a great lesson for him about jumping. And it didn't have like a life or death consequence.
Yeah.
So that was to hear Sarah say that, I was like, wow, what a radical shift to change what you interpret as what's bad and what's good. And to assume that some injury, you're going to break some bones.
Yeah.
On this way.
Yeah, I think this is kind of maybe the flip side of what we were talking about earlier about a lack of engagement maybe with some of the stuff. Discernment, prayer, engagement with God is guilt could be a demotivating factor, but also this side of it too. Like, well, I've tried it before and it hurt or it was hard or I failed or whatever. It also makes me think of just showing up, like being present in a way that's not just sort of like going through the hoops or the motions of, oh, I have to go to this and I'm not going to really engage.
Yeah.
But actually being available, which takes energy and risk. mm-hmm. the ways that you're talking about. But that's a really practical, simple thing. Like, that could be to anything, whether it's to church, to work, to family, to friends, to whatever.
Yeah.
Like, it's easy to not really be present.
It's so easy for me to not really be present. Josh, in the neighborhood table discussion, said something he's been experimenting with lately is coming to each conversation as if something extraordinary might happen.
Mm-hmm.
And he says 100% so far, something has. And it's obvious that it's part of his shift in perspective.
Right.
But as a 9 on the Enneagram, mm-hmm. One of our default ways of living is resignation. Kind of like, I'm just resigned to what's going to happen. And it's a very kind of fate, like wah, Eeyore, like wah, wah, my tail fell off again. Oh, well, mm-hmm. nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
And I remember in this sermon at the back of the Richard Rohr on Enneagram book, there's this sermon for all on Advent for all of the Enneagram types. So Jesus is born and each of them respond to Jesus being born kind of in their number.
Mm-hmm.
And then they all go and meet baby Jesus, and Jesus talks to them in only a language they can understand to each of their types.
Mm-hmm.
And to the 9, Jesus says something. This is very shortened, but he says, I have decided to live. Like, look how uncomfortable it is here. Super uncomfortable. Stable.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I've decided to live and to dedicate myself. And I need you. I need you to bring peace, like wholeness, goodness. And you're going to pick up a few scratches in the process. That's what he says to the 9. Mm-hmm. And I remember reading that and being like, how did he know? Mm-hmm. That's like exactly what I need to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Look how uncomfortable it is here. Look how much work it's going to take. I've decided to dedicate myself to living, to the living process, to the experiment of living and loving. And I need you to as well. And you can bring something significant if you do. But it's going to take work and energy and trust, and you're going to get a few scratches in the process.
Yeah.
So that's particular to maybe me, but maybe it relates to other people too.
Yeah. Well, I could see some people hearing a call to be present again, maybe in just simple, like just a first step sort of way, because they've closed themselves off. I could hear other people feeling a challenge to, wow, showing up in a real way takes energy.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I've overcommitted myself to too many places to show up, and it's too much. And out of self-preservation, I have to not be present at least some of the things.
Mm-hmm.
And I might just be able to name those things or be aware of those things because we're all different. Mm-hmm. And some of us might be able to handle more and less in different seasons. And so just this seems like that's an important part of discernment. It's like, okay, this is what I can show up. These are the kind of things I can show up for in this season.
Such a good example. Creative engagement means creative withdrawal. Every yes, which is engagement. You're like, will you marry me? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Will you do life, Vanessa, child of God?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I will. It means a series of renunciations and deciding what those are and letting them be, because it's hard to say no to a bunch of good things. That's part of it.
Yeah. I know for myself to be present, I need a certain amount of non-present time.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to protect that time and be intentional with that time.
Mm-hmm.
And those are directly related to each other, the quality of those things.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I'd love to think about the more practical implications, because that was a great one for people listening. Okay, do you want to hear my last one?
Yeah.
So we have different morality, different time zone, different knowledge, different expectations. I don't know what to call this one, but I put down different race.
Mm-hmm.
Like, creative engagement is like running a different race.
Yeah.
The race metaphor comes from Paul, you know, run this race set before you.
Yeah.
But it's also like the cultural metaphor we've been talking about, like the rat race, the what you see is what you get, the don't waste time, better produce something that's profitable or consumable or something. it's so easy to live in that race mindset, mm-hmm. which is within the box and not in that open field. So running a different race to me is, you know, instead of thinking about my day today as, okay, I've got to earn my way mm-hmm. into being a good person, not make any mistakes, and just go on autopilot, you know, like yeah. basically get this day over with. It's what you mentioned earlier. It's kind of assuming that there is a God mm-hmm. and that God is at work in me and in this day. And there is an opportunity to participate in that. It's like yeah. the enchanted huh. worldview.
Yeah.
So I don't think I'm getting at it right with the word race, but yeah, Emily Dickinson has this book about Jesus, one of her poetry books, and her name for Jesus in it is the Tender Pioneer, which is such a beautiful mm-hmm. phrase. And to me, that captures what this race is like, is that there is a tender pioneer at work in the world, in all the people you love, in every situation. And there is this invitation every day to collaborate, to co-create, to participate. And life just is like better and more fun mm-hmm. and more meaningful with those eyes, yeah. with that sight.
Reminds me of 4 Ways to Pray.
It does.
Especially the contemplation. Mm. Like just thinking of just being in the mental habit of remembering God is, mm-hmm. is one example. Mm-hmm. You still know that I am God.
Yeah.
Because it pushes against the underlying assumption of a materialistic assumption mm-hmm. that we've talked about before. Like, despite the creed I say on Sunday, I live as if all those, so many of those things weren't true. I catch right. myself just because of the time and place we live in. And so practicing presence in that way, or practicing that contemplation of even a little mantra, mm-hmm. God is. Mm-hmm. God, it could just be a simple one. Like, you could have mm-hmm. so many because it's such an, you know, as you say, an enchanted worldview. Mm-hmm. But just seeing what are those spaces of, oh, I was, when I did that practice today, this is what I noticed. Mm-hmm. Or these are the feelings that came out of that, or the sense that came out of that, or the experience that came out of that. Mm-hmm. Be interesting.
That's such a good one. It is about remembering that God is. I remember when I moved to Victoria and we stayed in somebody's empty house for a couple of weeks when we were looking for a rental, and they just had this huge window mm-hmm. in the living room. And Victoria landscape is so different than Philadelphia. So it was like this huge Gary Oak tree kind of by Mount Tolmie. Mm-hmm. So kind of high up and looking out, and there was so much sky and there's so many trees. And my word for God was just you. Mm. Like, I felt like I would just like look out that window and think you. Mm. And it felt so intimate. And yet there was a difference. It was like, I'm in here. Then I just moved to the city. And then there's a you. And that's like enough of a prayer to mm-hmm. just be like, wow, you, like you exist. Mm-hmm. I'm talking to you. I'm looking at you. You are here. I am here. That does capture the
enchanted. It's necessarily basic because it's so, because we're fighting against something that's so ingrained mm-hmm. that, kind of like how children learn, like toddlers or babies, I don't know, mm-hmm. Of just the basics of being and existing and who am I and who are you and those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. It seems so simple and it's easy to miss because of that. But I think there, on some level, that's the basic level of just reprogramming ourselves towards what is true.
Mm-hmm. And this one, this kind of applies to all of them, but I was thinking I need some way to notice, capture, and integrate what's going on in order to live creatively, to creatively engage with God and with life. Mm-hmm. And so that this goes back to the jewel hunter part for me. Like, the kingdom of heaven is like this woman who is on the hunt for jewels. And so every day I need some way to pay attention to, survey, capture, reflect on what these little gems are that the Spirit gives me eyes to see. Mm-hmm. So that's just that's simple things like just paying attention to what am I talking about or worrying about lately? Or how am I talking about things? Mm-hmm. I noticed that with the directees I work with, there's people in for seasons, they use this word a lot, a certain word. And it's like a word I've never used, mm-hmm. you know? And I'll be like, wow, you said that word so many times. Like, what is it about that word? And they'll be like, yeah, that is a word for me right now. Mm-hmm. So it made me wonder, do I use words for seasons? And what does that say that I'm like kind of going towards this word a lot? I remember when I moved to Victoria, I was using the word sustainable all the time. Mm-hmm. It was just like such a pretty word. And I always just reached for it. I'd be like, oh, so we're talking about what's sustainable or is this sustainable? Lately, the word I've been using a lot is explicit. Mm. It's just a great word, explicit. Huh. But I never used it before the age of 40. But somehow I found it and into my little field mm-hmm. of existence, it's become something. And I think it reveals something God's doing in my life is a desire to make things more explicit or to be more direct or to say what I mean. You know, it's kind mm-hmm. of creative and mysterious and evocative, but to even notice what words am I using a lot? Mm-hmm. What metaphors am I drawn to? What is coming up in my dreams? Mm. All of those things require some regular capture process. And that might be journaling. It might be being a verbal processor mm-hmm. and talking at night with your roommate about what happened and being curious as you do. Mm-hmm. It might be going for spiritual direction. That's a main place monthly mm-hmm. where for an hour I bring all my little gems. I'm like, I have 10 gems. I don't know which one is a pearl, mm-hmm. but these all kind of are shimmering. It's kind of like Lexio on your life. Mm-hmm. I've noticed these, I've picked up these this month and I want to listen to them and pay attention to them. And then one from that time might emerge as like, this is the invitation for me during Lent. There's a bunch of invitations I could have gone with for like my Lent practice, but this is the one that feels mm-hmm. the richest for me. So I'm going to do that. Yeah. That was all of my conditions.
Good conditions.
The question that I don't know the answer to yet is what is the pearl of great price? Ooh. You know, I think that's at the heart for me of creative engagement with life. Yeah. With my existence, with God, with one another, with culture. If I am a jewel hunter, if I'm mm-hmm. on the hunt for jewels during my lifetime, what is the pearl of great price? Like, what is the one thing that is so valuable to me that nothing else compares, mm-hmm. that makes it all meaningful and worth it? Mm-hmm. All the little time-wasting things I do and experiments and creative outlets and mistakes. Mm-hmm. I have some ideas.
Let's hear them.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm ready.
One idea is that my existence is the pearl of great price. I hope that doesn't sound humanistic or something, but just that attitude of, wow, you exist and I am a creature. And I am on the receiving end of this gift of life, you know, profoundly awed, profoundly humbled, profoundly grateful for getting to be here. I wonder about that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When I was in college, my boyfriend of a couple years broke up with me and I was heartbroken and he was going to leave Trinity and go back to California. And I remember just being so heartbroken and my world was like, so my future was all broken up. And I remember thinking, I can't continue with school. Like, I just don't know. I don't know how to do school anymore. So I remember bringing up to my parents, like, I think I want to take a break and come home. And I was so scared to say that because I was like a good student and a good Christian, and I was at a good Christian school. And so to admit that I was so kind of devastated by this breakup, mm-hmm. made me feel embarrassed and thought they'd be disappointed. Like, Vanessa, you're being so unholy and immature. Like, a boy's going to keep you from doing your mm-hmm. university education. Like, give me a break. Mm-hmm. So it was a big deal to even admit that I was feeling a struggle. But I told them, and it felt like an experiment. Like, I don't even know what I wanted to hear from them, yeah. but I knew I was testing them in some way about, is it okay that I'm not as perfect as you think I am? And maybe I was asking, am I okay with it? Like, mm-hmm. can I handle being this needy girl? Mm-hmm. My dad had sent in the mail, you know how long things take to get to Canada? Like,
yeah,
2 weeks.
They take forever.
I asked this the next day in the mail. So he sent this 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I got a card, and in the card was like a pearl necklace from like my grandma or something, mm-hmm. his mom. And it said, you are the pearl. Mm-hmm. And I was so moved by that. That felt like God's grace to me through my dad, through this question that I was asking, which mm-hmm. Is it okay if I am not the daughter you thought I was? Mm. And then he had already sent me this necklace that said, you are the pearl. Kind of, he's a pastor. He was, yeah. what he was meaning was, I was the pearl of great price mm-hmm. that God gave up everything for mm-hmm. and sold everything for, because I was that mm-hmm. lovable. Mm-hmm. Or I don't even know if it's that I was that lovable, but that God chose to create me mm-hmm. and love me. And mm-hmm. every breath I take is an affirmation that
yeah.
God loves me. So that's what I mean about maybe my own existence is the pearl, and learning how to steward that and yeah. thank God for it. Mm-hmm. That's
finding your significance in being an object of God's love.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty good. It's a good possibility.
Yeah, it's plausible.
Yeah. I have two more. Mm-hmm. Are we going too long though?
No, go for it.
Okay. Love. Pearl of great price maybe is love. Mm-hmm. So simple, because I mean, it's all over the Bible. Like, God is love. What's a great commandment? Love, love, mm-hmm. love your neighbor as love yourself, love God.
Yeah.
But love is becoming less abstract for me. And I'm starting to wonder, maybe the pearl of great price is learning how to love. It's mm-hmm. Vanessa Marie Caruso. Learning how to love the life she has been given, learning how to love herself, learning how to love God and the people in it. And really what I think by learning how to love, what I think that shows up as is becoming more and more known by God. Hmm. Like, I think I'm loving God. What actually happens when I am loving is that I am being known by mm-hmm. God in the process.
Yeah.
Paul has this line in Corinthians that says, anyone who loves God is known by God. Hmm. It's that part about knowledge puffs up, you know, mm-hmm. if you claim to know something, you don't even really know it yet. Mm-hmm. But anyone who loves God is known by God. And then Jesus a couple times says this too. People are like, hey, we did this in your name and we're going to do this and we're going to do this. And he says, I'm going to say to you, go away from me. I never knew you. Like, you can do all these things. Mm-hmm. I didn't know you. You didn't let yourself be known by me. Love is letting yourself be known.
Yeah.
And then the bridesmaids or virgins parable is the same thing. There's like five that get in, five that don't. They knock on the door late. And what he says to them is, go away from me. I never knew you. Mm-hmm. And those kinds of things always surprise me in the Bible, when love or service or ministry is reframed by God or Jesus as, you didn't let yourself be known mm-hmm. by me mm-hmm. and in this life. So yeah. I've wondered if that is the pearl of great price, is letting myself be known by God, by other people, by myself. Mm-hmm. And what that looks like is love, mm-hmm. is trying to fall in love with life and with yeah. God. Kind of abstract, but I'm trying to get yeah. to the core.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. I like the connection between love and being known by God, because I those are very tied to each other. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a better category for the Christian than self-care is receiving God's love.
Yes.
That's better care than it self-care.
It's like capital. It's
more necessary care.
Yeah.
Because I think otherwise we get lost or stuck and we can't self-care very well.
No.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like, to me, it seems like these are, you got one more.
You see, you have three? Two. Yeah, I do have one more.
Oh, you have one more. Yeah. But so far, it seems like these are kind of at least the contours of what's being talked about. Mm-hmm. They seem like they got to be in the mix there somewhere.
Yeah. This conversation will help me.
And those two are kind of together, like being known by God and existence.
Yeah.
And even the parable examples you gave of, I never knew you, mm-hmm. but I knew you over a year, and being named and known by the Creator seems to have some implications for being real.
Yeah. Being real.
Like as in, I am because God is.
Yes.
And he knows me.
Yeah. I'm sure there's some really good practical implications mm-hmm. or applications of this. I haven't quite gotten there yet. So, you know, what does this all look like? So we've been talking about creative engagement with God. And I said, there's these five conditions that I have learned are required for me to operate in a way where I can creatively engage. And I don't mm-hmm. just go through the motions, and I don't just, walk through life half asleep.
Yeah.
So those are the conditions, these alternative ways of living and being. Mm-hmm. But then, the question about what it's all for, like what is the pro? I guess being someone on the hunt for what is valuable and what is real.
Yeah.
That's part of that.
The parables are all, they usually are prefaced, and I can't, because I don't have this one in front of me, but it's like the kingdom of God is mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. this. And so, but the kingdom of God is sort of a complex of God's mercy and justice and goodness being worked out in the creation and in life, mm-hmm. a space where God is and God's intentions are realized, and it's good. Mm-hmm. And so it seems like that's got to be, which I think overlap a lot with what you're like, this is our personal experience of God's kingdom, is knowing and being known by God and being named by God and having that sense of existing because of God's goodness and learning the different morality of his kingdom that is marked by grace and mercy and love, as you've been talking about.
Yeah.
Which leads me to wonder, what's your third one?
Oh, it's so similar. It's trust. Like in that Firewatch essay I mentioned from mm-hmm. Thomas Merton, he asked this question a couple times in it. And my Thomas Merton professor at Trinity, Lynn Szabo, who was amazing, she is a Thomas Merton kind of scholar and expert. And she says throughout his writings, he's always asking questions to God about his vocation. And am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing? Am I wrong? Am I right? And what Thomas Merton repeatedly writes is that God always asks him the same question back when he asks this question to God, but he never says what the question is. And in Firewatch, he alludes
Thomas,
to it. I know.
Come on.
Yeah. He asks God these questions, and then God always asks the same question back. And so for our semester, she was like, what do you think the question is? That's your quest. So we had to come up like, what is this question God asked back every time in Thomas Merton's life through all these poems, books? He's like living with this question from God that he always gets. It's the answer to his question, but it's a question which is so God-ish.
Yeah.
So she tells us at the end what she thinks it is. Huh. She thinks the question from God to Thomas Merton in every question is, do you trust me? And that formed my imagination hearing that. And I thought, what if every time I rail against God, I write my letter about why I don't like Thessalonians to God. Every time I thank God for something that I did not create or earn, you know, something that I'm receiving? What if all of my tantrums, my love letters, my living, in all of that, what if God is always asking me, do you trust me? Mm-hmm. Do you trust me? Do you trust me? And so trust is that third one, totally goes along with existence and love.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm just wondering, maybe the pearl of great price is being in a position.
Yeah, it's built into the story, isn't it?
How?
Because they're giving up all they own for this pearl. There's mm-hmm. like a conviction mm-hmm. or a trust there that, oh, this is worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Josh talked about that in his his kind of sermon on creativity too. Mm-hmm. He's like talking about the tree of the knowledge of good of evil. He said mm-hmm. it wasn't about the tree. It was mm-hmm. about trust. Mm-hmm. Like trust is kind of at the heart.
Yeah.
Do you trust me? Maybe the jewel hunting is always a way of God just saying to be in relationship with me. Do you trust me now? Mm-hmm. Do you trust me in this? Do you trust me mm-hmm. now? And our life is an experiment to prove that we do trust.
Pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
I like it.
Me too. I don't know what to say now. I think
way
that
to creatively
was it.
Engage.
Thanks.
And now, so you're going to preach all this at our table gathering
on
Sunday, and it's going to be an hour long.
Wow. Yeah, it can't be. Got to cut about 45 minutes of it.
Okay. Well, so this will be.
This will help.
You can say, hey, if you want more, go to this podcast.
Love it.
I made. It's perfect.
Yeah.
Thanks, everybody, for tuning in with us. If you are on Apple Podcasts or if where you're listening to our podcast has reviews, it would mean a lot to us to give us a review and even say a line or two of what you liked about the show. And any ideas for future episodes, we're taking notes.
Or insults.
Or insults for Vanessa specifically. Just send to bearwithme@tablechurch.ca. And we'll see you next time.
Bye,
bye everybody.